everyone, and welcome. This is episode 322 of Milwaukee's Tailgate Brewers Podcast, part of the MKE Tailgate Network. I'm James, back again this week with Ryan and Paul as we do this on a Sunday morning. I'm back from vacation, picked up whatever airplane crud Paul always gets when he's traveling around, because that was not fun. But I'll suffer through this one. But how are you guys doing this weekend?
Well, I hope you at least had fun.
Yeah, we had fun. Weather down in Cabo was very good. Basically what we did was got a cheap vacation to sit through a, you know, timeshare presentation that we weren't going to take. And we were basically held hostage for 3 hours and couldn't leave. And it was not a pleasant experience for that part of it, but I guess worth it to save a few $100, I guess. I don't know.
It's always tricky with those things, time versus money. Yeah. I'm actually kind of hacked off because I'm doing combine stuff right now, and the combine chose to put the agility drills for the skill positions last, and the result of that was that nobody ran them. And for most positions, those are the things we actually care about. Like the 40-yard dash is what gets headlines, but the 40-yard dash actually doesn't matter for almost any position except for tight end and a little bit for offensive line. And so, like, we have all this useless information out of the combine, and I can't do anything with it. Ted Thompson must be spinning in his grave right now thinking about having to draft a receiver with no three-cone score. They'll do them at pro days, but pro days are not, you know, as official. You know, they can fudge things at pro days. So, anyway, annoying, but whatever. Very minor.
Okay, so it wasn't just that, like, Braylon Allen decided not to do that. It was like everybody was deciding not to do those.
No running backs to any agility drills. Zero of them.
That's a little bit of a problem when trying to evaluate, you know, that specific skill for that.
Yes, it is.
And everybody's razzes are, like, incomplete and all that stuff too, right? So, yes, like,
the vast majority of receivers have no agility scores and no running backs have agility scores. That is how that worked out.
Yeah, that not great for your own purposes there, and I'm sure front offices are kind of irritated as well. The combine's already kind of just a giant waste of time, so without all of that stuff, it's like, why are we even here?
Yeah, and it's for the benefit of the NFL. Like, front offices should at least have, I think, some say in the important ones. Archon and some other people were making the point, the jumps should be last, because, well, they are important metrics for a bunch of positions. You can't like fudge them at pro days, you know. It's just a tape measure. It's right. It's not like laser timing things versus stopwatch timing things. So that would be smart. They should do that maybe next year.
All right. Well, that's going on the Packer side of things, Brewer side of things. You know, spring training games going on. We've had at least a telecast or two, so people could watch a little bit of the Brewers, at least in between technical difficulties.
I was gonna say, watch.
Occasionally, a couple pitches here or there. Totally missed Jacob Mizorowski's spring debut. So, you know, we'll just have to believe he looked excellent and go with the box score there. But at least early look at some Jackson Chourio and some other folks like that. So we've got some questions to get to pertaining to the first week or two of spring training. But before we get started, a reminder, as always, you can become a patron and get question priority for this podcast and reporting as eligible over at patreon.com/mketailgate. That's at $2 a month. You get that question priority. $5, though, you get the extra content. You get the Minor League Extra with Ryan and James Anderson from RotoWire, as well as Paul's Packers mini pods. Even if you're not a patron, support us another way. Go give us a subscribe or a follow over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you're listening to this right now. You can also give us a 5-star review to help us climb up the rankings there and help more people find this podcast. So, you know, as we mentioned, not a whole lot of news so far out of Brewers camp. I think in the early days, at least, no news is good news, because that's usually when the major injury things start to pop up. There was one bit of injury news that kind of came out of nowhere. On Friday, Pat Murphy told reporters that Wade Miley was 50-50 to be ready for opening day due to soreness in his throwing shoulder. Saturday, he provided an update and said Miley played catch and played through it. Hasn't had any problems since. They're just going slow because of his history. And then, you know, Pat Murphy being Pat Murphy, I believe he threw in a crack. That thing will happen when you're 50. So, taking another dig at Wade Miley's age there. But I guess, Ryan, how concerned should we be about this if Wade Miley is not ready to go for his first start of the year?
I mean, we're all anticipating that Wade Miley is going to miss some time, right? So that's,
yeah,
like, nobody's expecting the guy to go out and make like 32 starts. That would be insane to think that that was even possible. Right. But to have it start right away out of the gate like this, to have it be, especially in the shoulder, because shoulders are the devil, as we always say here. Yeah, there's a level of concern here that we've been lucky the years we've gotten Wade Miley where he's been relatively healthy and they've been able to get 100 plus innings out of him. There have been other teams in other seasons in between those stints, like the Cubs in 2021. Or I guess 2022, where they only got, you know, a handful of innings out of him. And that's certainly in the realm of possibility here. And at some point, it's all just going to, you know, stop working. He is getting up to that age. So, yeah, there's a level of concern here. I think the biggest thing is, you know, they just didn't have to give that much to take this shot. So that from that perspective, it's not like a huge loss. But for the team for this year, it could be significant because Miley is, right now he's slated to be the second guy to go, right? I mean, he'd be the second person behind Freddy Peralta. And so, yeah, it can potentially impact this season. So there's a level of concern here.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons I think it was just reasonable to be more down on them than we usually are. And then even Steve, he's their second best starting pitcher. He just is that. And, you know, we have gotten lucky with him. And eventually luck runs out, especially because Wade Miley has been an old man pretty much every season we've ever had him, and we have had him for many, many, many seasons, and it's going to fall away at some point. And I think, you know, the best case Brewer scenarios out there were to have Miley, you know, go for a significant number of innings, still with injuries and whatnot, because all pitchers have those. But, like, it would have been nice to bank a few starts before injuries popped up. When things go like this, there's always that chance that he just never gets right. I mean, even last year when he was pitching and reasonably healthy, I feel like every week we heard a quote that like, this is not feeling right. I'm trying to work through stuff. And if the eventual staff doesn't have Wade Miley or has him for like a week or two and then things get shut down, it just looks a lot worse. And that's not good. So, yeah, it's worth being quite concerned about it, I would say. It's one of their moonshots to have a mostly healthy Wade Miley. And to compete, they need some of those to pay off, and that's one that is not looking great already.
Yeah, wow. Looking back at this, I never would have guessed. You know, he only threw 80 innings in 2018 for the Brewers. So I was wrong when I said before that he was always over 100, because that wasn't the case. But yeah, looking at the Cubs in 2022, he had 37 innings. Obviously, COVID, but the COVID year, something was keeping him off the field because he only had 14.1 innings. So he was well below. And that was his actually only bad year in there. He had an ERA up over 5. That's the only time he's been really over 4 since coming to the Brewers in 2018 and kind of getting a new lease on life, as it were. Because when we got him in 2018, it was very much a speculative, like, is this guy going to give it? Nobody expected anything from him because he'd been bad for quite a while. So, yeah, it's interesting. There is depth there. There are some potential different ways that this can go. But, yeah, when the second best on paper starter that you have is complaining of shoulder issues in what would it be? It would be like March 1st or before that even. Yeah, in February.
Sort of camp, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's not good news ever.
All right, moving along here, only other real news that we had come out in the last week, some minor roster moves. Jamai Jones, famous for a single walk-off last year for the Brewers, had been DFA'd. He was claimed by the Yankees on a major league deal. The Brewers also signed a reliever, Kevin Hagert, to a minor league deal to provide some more bullpen depth. Ryan, either one of those register for you in terms of roster moves?
Nah, not really. I mean, he's just a potential guy. He's a righty. I at first was looking to see, oh, maybe he's a lefty. No, he's not a lefty. He's a righty. Just potential depth, but another potential guy there. They probably saw something that they liked that they think they can work with and are happy to do that. But he would be well down the list of people. You'd have to see a bunch of injuries happen, basically, because he's not on the 40-man. So you'd have to see a bunch of things happen before he could possibly get a shot. So that's really depth. And Jones seems like he could potentially have a decent run for a while, but the Brewers just have so much depth that he was far enough down on the depth chart that it just there was never any chance he was going to see much time with us anyway. Even last year when they had a ton of injuries, you know, they had people missing a lot of time on the infield. He was only ever able to get up for, I mean, it was hardly any time at all. So, yeah, these really don't move the needle much at all.
Yeah. I think the only thing important at all is Jones is an interesting trivia answer from here on out, like Edwin Maisonet. Right. So that's pretty much it.
Oh, Edwin Maisonet. Love that guy. All right. These moves do lead to our first Patreon question of the week, though. Steve S. noting a bit of a pipeline between the Yankees and Brewers, I guess you could call it that, developing. So Steve's question here saying, earlier this offseason, the Brewers acquired Jake Bowers from the Yankees. On February 14th, the Yankees traded for Clayton Andrews. Just a few days ago, they claimed Jamai Jones. Is it just a coincidence here that there's so much Yankees-Brewers transactions, or is there some connection between personnel or GMs? And since we are on Bowers, why is he still on the team? My concern grows daily that they'll let him be on the MLB roster. Please, no. So, Paul, just like you said, interesting trivia here, maybe, too, just the slew of these minor transactions between the two.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on there, but I would just say it's probably more coincidence than anything else, honestly. Who knows? Maybe they're making inroads to the New York market generally, given their newfound familiarity with the territory. That's all I got. And as far as being concerned with anybody on the roster right now, Jake Bowers or otherwise, it's spring training. They need bodies out there. And I wouldn't worry about anything at this point in time, especially absent performance. Like, if you get a rando who like rakes for all spring training, maybe. But even the Brewers, I don't feel like buy into that too much these days. But like, it's spring training. You need just people out there playing games and filling innings and making sure that your important players don't get hurt. So yes, Jake Bowers on the 40-man. I don't think that will last, but who knows?
Well, the other thing too is that Jake Bowers has only gotten into 2 spring training games.
Yeah.
And 5 at bats.
I was just trying to look up like how has he played?
Yeah. He's only gotten into 2 games at 5 at bats. So it's not like he's high in the rotation as far as those things go. Now, you can't necessarily read a ton into that, but a guy in a situation like him where he's clearly needing to prove something and show some stuff in camp to win a roster spot, if that's what's going to happen, the fact that he's not playing much shouldn't like indicate much of anything in terms of, oh, he's potentially going to win a spot. I think it's still somewhat of a long shot. There are lots of questions about what's going to happen at the end of this roster. The main thing to remember is that if Jake Bowers does make the roster at some point, that's subject to change in as little as a few hours, because we've seen that again and again and again, where guys make the roster and then they're gone right away because major league rosters. I think this is the first time I've gotten to say this spring. The most overrated thing about like an entire baseball season is who's on the opening day roster, because it just doesn't matter. It, especially in this day and age, because it's going to change so much within days. I mean, it used to be like, yeah, you guys could, if they made the opening day roster, they'd probably stick around at least for a month or two.
Yeah.
Guys might be off the roster within 24 hours. It's these things are just so subject to change that there is no reason to put that much stock into like who's going to make the opening day roster. I know everybody likes to play those games, but it just it doesn't matter in the way the game is managed now.
I think, too, especially these days of camp, you know, most of the regulars aren't getting at-bats. So somebody needs to stand out there and take those at-bats. And if you see guys like Jake Bowers or some other, you know, minor league free agents out there getting a lot of run early, it's not necessarily a sign that they're in the team's plans. It's just they're the most expendable guys to throw out there, and you're giving them a shot early to make an impression. That's about it.
Yeah. And the Yankees thing is, this happens all the time. We have this going back and forth with the Rays quite a bit. Like, we're always forever making little minor moves with them, or bigger moves, like getting Willy Adames and things like that. We make moves with the Rays all the time. The Yankees are a smart organization, despite what their fans might think. They're smart. They know what they're doing. And so there's going to be a lot of crossover. They're going to be looking at a lot of the same things that, say, the Brewers are looking at in terms of players. So it's not shocking that you would see crossover there between how many transactions have we done where the Dodgers are picking up our leftovers or we're picking up theirs, little things here and there. That's happening all the time, too. And it's because we're looking at a lot of the same information as the people in those front offices are. So, yeah, that's just part of how things work these days.
All right, jumping into the rest of the Patreon questions this week, Lucroy Suitcase with another early spring training question here asking, are we at the point where we should start to worry about the elevated strikeout rates from Jackson Chourio and Joey Weimer? Seems like Weimer is pretty broken even with the new swing. So, Paul, again, super early. I wouldn't be too super concerned, right?
Especially about Chourio. Like, he's going to take adjustment periods at pretty much everything, including just coming back and starting spring training. So if this persists for the next several months, then you can start to worry. But that's the minimum amount of time before you can start to worry about that. You know, Chourio's a young kid. He's still working on, like, fundamentals at this point, and it's just a matter of how quick he learns stuff. Weimer, it's still too early to worry about him. New swings take practice as well, but he has more of an established profile of, you know, having kind of a broken offensive profile. And at some point, that new swing, if it, you know, is useful at all, should start to show some dividends, but not yet. Like, it's so early. Like, there's nothing you should be worrying about for anybody in baseball at this point other than injury. Like, this is just working out kinks and rust and getting just back into shape, plus small sample size. So don't worry about anything yet. But do keep an eye on Weimer, and contact rate's a good thing to watch, because I think the point of that swing is it looks more compact. It looks like it's getting to the zone faster and staying there longer. And that's what it should do. And if it doesn't, then it will be a problem. But too early for that. We're in the experimental phase right now.
Yeah, you have to give a lot of time on this stuff. And also, it's spring training. We have no idea how locked in anybody is at this point either. Like, are they still working on various things? Now, this is generally more true of pitchers, where you don't even know, like, are they throwing their full arsenal? Are they like still working on given pitches? Are they, like, all those things are going on in spring training, and we generally get more information about that than we used to. But remember how it always used to be a big deal when Ben Sheets' curveball would show up? Like, everybody would be like, oh, right, there's the Ben Sheets curveball. And it was usually, like, the last week of camp, like, one of his very last starts, where people were like, oh, guess what? Ben Sheets can still throw a curveball. So, yeah, there's all those kinds of things. It is way, way too early. We're going to need to wait into the regular season. The main thing that, like, this could potentially do for Weimer is winning a big league roster spot out of camp. This could theoretically impact that, but even then, I don't know how much they're going to be looking at these numbers and how much they'd be looking at other things in terms of what's going on, because they've got much more information than what we have. They're seeing a lot more of him in terms of what he might be doing in simulated games or backfield stuff, anything like that. This process is still largely opaque to people on the outside in terms of how, like, opening day roster spots work. And sometimes it's just a matter of, like, well, we need a certain thing. Do they need this certain thing over that certain thing? And Weimer has enough other attributes, like the fact that he can play all three outfield positions really, really well, and that he is a lefty masher from the right-hand side. So he has positive things that he can bring in that perspective too. So oftentimes it's just a question of, like, what is the roster fit to get going?
Yeah, always important to remember that, especially in these first handful of games too. These are like the first 10 or 15 at bats against like live in-game pitching these guys are seeing after months away too. And in Churio's case too, he's never had to deal with, say, a Joe Kelly wicked slider out of the bullpen, right? Like, it's the first time he's ever seeing that pitch. It's okay if he strikes out. I guess along similar lines here, Patreon question from Ian Pomplin asking, any concerns that Garrett Mitchell isn't hitting the ball in the Cactus League? Paul, similar thoughts here, like obviously very early.
I mean, all things being equal, it's better to see guys come out, make contact, etc., but it's still early. And you know, Mitchell's another one of the young guys from last year where he obviously had a very good year with the bat before he got hurt, but historically the bat's not been super great for him. So it's too early to tell anything, and it's not great that he's struggling so far, and he may just also not be that good of an offensive player. But again, everybody's working on stuff, so until we get further along and people are still struggling, there's no need to worry. And honestly, with Mitchell, I'd actually I do want to see him make contact and whatnot, but I'd actually want to see him elevate the ball and bring back some of that power that he got last year, because his contact rate is atrocious. So if he doesn't have power, then that's going to be something that doesn't play very well. So that, like, that's what I'm watching for him. But again, it's too early for anything to matter. Like, everybody's just working on their basic swing and whatnot. And a month from now, re-ask the question. Then we can worry.
Yeah, Spencer and I were going back and forth on this a few weeks ago now about people complaining about how Joey Weimer is a windmill and that he just strikes out all the time. And then
Mitchell strikes out more than Joey Weimer does.
And then they're like, yeah, that's why I want Garrett Mitchell on the team. And it's like, well, in his major league time, Garrett Mitchell struck out like literally 10 percentage points higher. You know, it's like 28% for Weimer and it's like 38% for Mitchell. I don't think that that number for Mitchell is where he's going to end up. I think he's going to settle in lower than that just because some of his like contact numbers and like whiff numbers have been better than that. So I think, and we're, as far as Mitchell goes at the big league level, we don't even have like a, what do we have, like 150 plate appearances? It's
something like that.
Yeah. It's hardly anything at this point, but yeah, I think we've all been sort of Garrett Mitchell skeptics, going back to his time as a prospect. Like, we've been Garrett Mitchell skeptics. The thing that he can do is, and we know he's really good at, is he's an amazing defender, and he has those tools and has, you know, potentially very close to 80 speed. If it's not 80 speed, it's very close to 80 speed.
Yeah.
So that gives him a floor and a, and something to work with, but he also just, the offense throughout his entire career has been very, very weird. And especially, like you said, his ability to tap into power, that's going to be super huge here. He showed a surprising amount of it so far in his big league career, but that was a relatively new thing going back to his, you know, throughout his minor league career and especially his college career, where he has that UCLA swing, or had the UCLA. I think he's adjusted it some from where he was at UCLA, but still, he's not tapping into the power that I think he actually does kind of naturally have.
Yeah.
And there's always a question, until you see a guy do that, is he actually going to do that? So,
and so we've seen him for 141 PAs. And I remember last year, in last year's Baseball Prospectus annual, they had a little caveat in his profile, like a little 10%, like, we don't think he's going to be very good, but if he can actually start making contact at a reasonable rate and tap into that power, he could actually be like an all-star, because his raw tools are so good, and his defensive floor is going to be so good that if he can actually hit halfway decently, like, he'll be a very, very, very good player. And we kind of got teased a little bit with that, at, you know, for his very small amount of time in the bigs last year. But again, small sample size, who knows if that'll stick? And he just can't stay healthy. He gets hurt just all the time. So still a lot of things to worry about with Garrett.
Mm-hmm. The injury thing is huge too, because that also persists back to UCLA.
Right. All right. Jay Google, our next question, asking, does Eric Haas make the opening day roster for a couple weeks to make sure Gary Sanchez is healthy? Also, what's your gut feeling on Aaron Ashby? Does he start in the pen or down at AAA to start the season? Ryan, what do you think on those aspects of the roster?
Okay, so Yeah, the Eric Haas thing is interesting. They were making some noise about the idea that they're going to carry three catchers at points this season. I personally just don't really see it making that much sense to do that very much. Yes, there might be moments when you do it. Though, did you guys realize that last year they had Contreras and Caratini on the roster, and they were the only two players who ever caught an inning for the Brewers the entirety of last year? And how insanely rare that is.
Crazy durability for both of them. Yeah.
That is nuts.
Yeah, it is. It is totally nuts. And I wouldn't expect that to maintain just because Sanchez is coming in with this question, this injury question that he had picked up. So I think that we have to be skeptical and wonder about that. And we did find out, it was pointed out to us, that Eric Haas is on a split contract. So he's not on a purely major league contract. So they have some ability to send him up, bring him down. I'm not sure exactly what the terms of that are, but there is some ability to do that. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. It's going to depend. We haven't seen much of Sanchez, if anything. I don't think we've seen anything of Sanchez yet, have we?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm looking in terms of like what he's done in games so far, and it's a big fat nothing. Yeah. So we haven't seen anything from Sanchez yet. So, yeah, it's certainly possible that he could do that, but I wouldn't be expecting like a ton of it. And it's just not an ideal roster fit, especially with the way their roster is built right now. They have so many young players that they'd like to give chances to, that chewing up a roster spot for Eric Haas for a huge portion of the season just doesn't ring as something that I would want them to do or that I think they would do.
I think that's probably true, although I will say I think Haas will probably get a couple cups of coffee up there to deal with injury issues, mm-hmm. and that Gary Sanchez will play. Actually, both of them will play a decent amount of DH. And, you know, I would wager, I'd actually maybe put a little bit of money on Haas starting with the team at the big leagues if Sanchez is at all dinged up, with him starting as the DH and then getting sent down like a week into the season and switching things up. That's going to happen with somebody. I feel like that always happens with some loser that we don't like. No offense to Eric Haas. I just called you a loser we don't like. But I feel like there's always a guy who's like a random, you know, depth piece who starts the season with the big league club, and then they just switch that up after a week and we never hear from him again. I wouldn't be surprised if that actually does happen here.
Yeah, same.
Sure. I guess you guys focused on Haas. How do you feel about Ashby in the pen or starting, or what's your gut feeling on that right now, Ryan?
We'll see, because I think he's supposed to pitch today. So
I was going to say, I haven't yesterday. Seen him do anything, so I have no idea.
He pitched on Saturday.
Oh, did he pitch yesterday? That was,
yeah.
I had the game on, but it was kind of hard to follow for various
yeah.
reasons.
Yeah, he did pitch on Saturday. I fell asleep, so I don't really recall what he did. I did hear that he gave up a home run toward the end of his stint. I think he was kind of just running out of gas there, but you know, obviously,
yes.
They're trying to get
so
him to stretch out here. Yeah, so I think they kind of hope that he can be a rotation piece, because obviously they need some upside in the rotation as well. It might just depend on how his shoulder reacts to, you know, some more extended outings as they go forward. But we'll see how that plays out, too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch from his perspective. By the way, yeah, he 81 ERA right now, because he, in one third of an inning, gave up three earned runs. So
it was a three run home run he gave up. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's also an unearned run in there somewhere. So yeah. Which means nothing. None of this means anything.
Nope.
But yeah, the Ashby thing is interesting, because you are worried about the injury situation and getting him back from that. I think one of the decisive factors in this is going to be if they want to have him start, if they're really committed, if they come out of spring training saying we want him to be a starter, I think that actually, you know, makes it less likely he makes the big league roster to start, and it's more likely he goes down then, because they potentially, hopefully, will have five guys ahead of him, though the Miley thing throws that into question too, but right. Hopefully they'll have five guys potentially ahead of him, and then he would go to AAA to just get started there and then come up. If they're willing to potentially use him as a swingman, which is what they've done so far in his career. If they're willing to do that, if they're willing to use him out of the pen that way, then that would increase his chances of making the opening day roster, right? Because that opens up, you know, a bunch more ways that he could potentially fit into the 13 pitchers they're going to carry. So,
Mark Podskarby, our next question, asking three under the radar guys that I'm keeping my eyes on this spring are Oliver Dunn, Blake Perkins, and Wes Clark. My bold prediction is at least one of those three ends the year as a starter for the Brewers on a scale of 1 to 10. What do you think the likelihood of me being correct is? Tough to say with those names, but you know, I caught a little bit of Oliver Dunn on Saturday, and dude can work a walk. It was a three ball count every time he was up. So maybe him. I don't know, Paul. How are you feeling about any of those three?
I'm not feeling like the odds are great there. there's I feel like there's just not a lot of spots open. Like Blake Perkins is useful. He is a good defensive outfielder, but like they already have enough problems getting people they want to play in the outfield and I'm just not sure, especially being it's starter at the end of the season, right? Yeah, and Blake Perkins can't hit, so like we have better Blake Perkins at home, and if he is on the team for outfield depth at some point because of injuries or whatever, yeah, okay, but no, I'm not feeling that one. Oliver Dunn, I'm the least familiar with, but he does seem to be able to work a walk. That's something. So maybe, but, and I guess Wes Clark can play first base. So, but again, we have like Rhys Hoskins should be that guy. And if he's not, there's other guys who can fit in there. So no, I think your odds are very low on all three of these, but you know, you never know, but you know, we're not like a stacked team, but we have a young team where all the positions are pretty much filled. So it's going to take some attrition for that to happen.
Yeah. Ending up as a quote unquote starter, I don't see it. Like,
yeah,
because there's very few guys who are like, who is a starter on this team? Like most guys kind of rotate through. There's very few guys who play absolutely every day and are like, that's just not how they run things with this club. But I mean, I could see Oliver Dunn potentially winning out and ending up on the roster more than, say, a guy like Bryce Terang. I could definitely see that happening, right? If sure. Dunn is able to, you know, sort of consolidate the gains and show that he can play reasonable defense. One of the things I did see, and I think it was the game yesterday, one of the games this week, Dunn made a pretty bad defensive play, let a ball really eat him up, and was like, oh, he's probably not the greatest of infielder, is he? So you never know about that stuff. It's very hard to judge, but the way he played it, just the ball kind of ate him up. So, but yeah, like somebody like that could potentially force their way into the roster and into at bats. But is Oliver Dunn going to be like ever a 600 plate appearance a year guy? I would strongly bet against that. Like that's just not very likely at all. No matter where he ends up, like that's just not very likely at all. So yeah, I think that if you're talking about, you've set a pretty high bar here to clear. If you had said something like, you know, will somebody if from this group end up getting, you know, 300-400 plate appearances, I'd give you, you know, maybe even as high as a 50-50 shot of that happening. But yeah,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. But sure. In terms of like taking a position and like making it theirs, really low percentage chance of that.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Dunn, especially, like the ideal for him is like a Ben Zobrist role where maybe you get that 300-400 plate appearances, but playing 3 or 4 different positions. So tough to be considered a starter in that way. Michael Power has a question here that's maybe semi-related to that. Who ends up playing third base for the Brewers? Is it Monasterio, Ortiz, Black, Frelick, Wilkin, or a player to be named later? Paul, obviously, one of the major positions that we've got our eyes on this spring.
Yeah. So I would start with Monasterio and Black as my favorites here. And it's too early to tell because we haven't gained a lot of information. And I think that they would like it if it was Black. I think the questions there are just about his defense and his arm strength in particular, but they'd like that bat to come around and they would like to have him be a third baseman where they don't really have, I mean, just look at the names we just read off. And so I've seen Black make a couple of throws just randomly and not looking too bad. I think that might work. So I will bet on Black for the most third base at like PAs, but I don't think it'll be overwhelming. I think that this will be split like five ways. So, but I would put money on him to do it. I don't think Monasterio is very good. That's the other thing. Like, I think he could just crash and be terrible pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, by the end of the year, I think it's going to be Wilken, but I don't think that's going to happen until closer to the end of the year. I think that we're looking at that. Hopefully he takes control. Like, the ideal for Brock Wilken would be that he is able, he continues to hit at Double A to start the year, hits in Triple A, and then come September, they're ready to bring him up and let him get a potential trial run for winning Rookie of the Year in 2025. Like, I think that's the hope. We haven't seen the Brewers do that yet, but that would be kind of the ideal hope that I would have. Though, theoretically, he could potentially even do it sooner than that. Ortiz is a guy who I think is going to see more time at second base under this current setup, right? Like, Ortiz is going to play more second base.
That's been my assumption, yeah.
Yeah, I don't...
They clearly aren't happy there, and he's a middle infield guy, so...
Yeah, and he does have some serious power. We did see that this week. Like, he got into one, and I mean got into one in a big way this week. So he has more hitting ability than I think we initially, any of us, gave credit for, but we'll see how that shakes out. Defense. Oh,
sometimes the big exit velocity guys show up in spring training, and then once real pitching happens, the ball starts going into the ground a little bit more again.
Yeah, that is true. So we have to kind of wait and see how that's going to look. But there is something there with Ortiz. He's not just defense, which is kind of the way that we thought of him, and it's not just defense. There's some legitimate hitting ability there. We'll see how much it rounds into form. But yeah, I think they want early on for Tyler Black to do it, though. Tyler Black is also seeing a lot of time at first base. So we've seen him at first base more. And for the three broadcasts so far, Tyler Black's been at first base. Rhys Hoskins has barely played. Now, I think Hoskins is obviously the first baseman.
Yes.
But we're seeing more of Black, and I think that might be something they are going to entertain down the road. I think they would be perfectly happy if Wilken took third base away and moved Black over to first base. It would be kind of a weird inversion. Like, Black would be putting up the power you'd more normally associate, say, with third base, and Wilken would be putting up the power, hopefully, you'd more normally associate with first base. But it can all work and come out in the wash okay. But it's going to take some time. I think we're going to see a lot of Andrew Monasterio over there, especially in the early part of the season. And that will give way to more Wilken as the season goes on.
Yeah, I think that's probably the smart money. My bet is just that Monasterio actually kind of sucks and it becomes a problem large enough that they have to fix somehow, some other way.
Yeah.
Totally reasonable. All right, speaking of power, JD is asking, who's your odds-on favorite to lead the Brewers in home runs in 2024? And over under 4.5 players with more than 20 home runs. Paul, what do you think?
They're always tricky with this. They never tend to, most teams have a guy, you know.
Right.
Like, Hoskins isn't a huge power first baseman. I guess I'm gonna go with Contreras. I think it'll be him.
Speaking of that, yeah.
Yeah. He has tons of power, just needs to get the ball in the air more, but he started doing that, so I think he's a good bet to do it. Could be an outfield guy too, but I'll go with Contreras.
I'll go with Hoskins because I think he's going to get more plate appearances than Contreras will.
He will. But I still go with Contreras.
Yeah, and also just like Hoskins does have, he's pretty consistently been in the high 20s, low 30s for home runs throughout his career. So I think that's the thing. The other one is interesting. I'll pretty comfortably take the under, though, because we've talked about this. There's going to be a lot of time sharing on this team, and to get to 20 home runs, you have to play a lot unless you have just, you know, phenomenal power. I can definitely name five guys I think could hit 20 home runs on this team this year, but all of them doing it together, seems like it would be a long shot. So I'll take the under on that. It's honestly, if you set it at 3.5, I'd still be tempted to take the under, though that gets harder.
I don't know about so. I think Adamus probably yes if he's on the team.
I think that's also
that's the other caveat.
Yeah, I guess there's that. Hoskins probably yes, right?
If he's on the team, yes.
Contreras probably gets over 20, right?
Yeah.
Ryan Blow's expecting, maybe not. Okay.
I mean, how many did he hit last year? I don't think he didn't get 20 last year, did he?
I think it was like 19.
I think it was 19.
I'd have to double check.
Okay, because he and Yelich also had 19.
Yelich had 19 too.
Yeah,
I don't think Yelich gets 20. I think,
and that does seem like a high water mark for him. At least
he hit 20. Contreras hit 20 last year.
Oh,
he's had 20. Three consecutive seasons of 20 home runs.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh wait, hold on. I got the wrong. Of course, it defaulted to frickin' Wilson.
The wrong Contreras. Oh no.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, "Wait a minute, that's not right."
Oh man, I don't know if you guys caught the.
No, he had 17 Schroeder last year and 20 the year before.
Okay, there we go. That sounds more right.
Yeah.
But in Saturday's game, Bill Schroeder had a similar event where he went to go look up a guy's BREF and he had the wrong relief pitcher with the same name, and there were like three guys with the same name. So he's like, oh, he's been with the Rockies and the Twins, and it's like, no he hasn't.
One thing I do want to bring up, I don't know if you've noticed this, James, you were obviously, you slept through some of it, but they've gone three-man booth so far on TV in the two broadcasts where they had Jeff Levering as the play-by-play and then both Vinny Rotino and Rock as color guys, and I thought that actually worked pretty well. I think it, by forcing those two to speak less, it actually made them a little bit better and like tightened things up. And like there have been some really good three-man booths, like I obviously, like you would compare them to this, but like it can really work well when you have the right mix of people. The Ron Darling, Keith Hernandez, and was it Gary Cohen?
In New York, yeah.
Yeah, that group is, you know, kind of the gold standard at this point of TV broadcast, team TV broadcast, and that's a three-man booth. So, like, it obviously can work. I would be okay with this. I assume we're going to get Tim Dillard here at some point because I think Rotino was talking about the fact that he's leaving and heading home for a while. So I think Dillard is going to come in and parachute in and replace him. Yep. Less thrilled about that, but...
Yeah.
So... But then again, maybe I do worry that if you put Dillard and Rock together, it's just going to be like a night at the Improv, and it'll be really, really like insufferable. That is a concern that I have. So we'll see how that actually works. We're going to get a chance to listen to that, I think. So hopefully it doesn't go that way.
All right, moving on. Steve DeRozier asking, what players on the Brewers or in the Brewers minor league system are you most looking forward to watching this season? And what will a successful season look like for those players? Paul, you know, obviously, Churio probably, but who else is on your radar as like a keen interest?
Don't go to me for minor league players.
I got this.
Ryan, go
so
for it.
I have taken Cooper Pratt and Quintero in every draft that I'm in so far. So I have been all over those guys. I'm super interested based on what like Jim Callis was talking about last year during the draft, that like he could just see Cooper Pratt being a guy who quickly establishes himself as a top prospect and then, you know, is in the futures game in like 2 years. And he got off to a really good start. Like, he really did look good. Granted, it's in rookie ball, but he's a high schooler. So being in rookie ball is appropriate for a kid just coming out of high school. Like, that's where you should start at that point. So that is a big one. I don't think we see Quintero, who is the Brewers' top signing this January 15th. I don't think we see him in the States this year. That would really be pushing it. Even Churio didn't get to the States until the year after, and played a year in the DSL. But Quintero has a lot of helium. Ben Badler really blew him up, and said that he is looking really good and that people have seen him. He's a guy who has a huge up arrow next to his name, coming into the actual signing period. So people are excited about him. So those would be two guys, though. It's probably going to be in the DSL for Quintero. But there's a lot of guys, you know, Eric Bitonti, we're going to see Josh Noth's, hopefully we'll see his pro debut because he didn't pitch for the Brewers at all last year in any games anyway. So we'll see his actual pro debut this year. But there's a lot of guys. They had a really interesting draft last year. And then there's interesting holdovers to see if guys can reestablish their value, like EBJ. We're really want to see if he can sort of reestablish his value after an up and down season last year. He missed some time with injury and just wasn't as good as you maybe would hope that a first round pick would be. So we'll see where all of that ends up. But yeah, this is a really interesting and deep system. So there's lots of things to watch in terms of who might be the next guys to break out, because obviously they're going to be graduating out their top prospects here. These guys are going to be leaving prospectdom this year for the most part. So it will be nice to see another group potentially come in behind them and keep those coffers full. And that's what they're really relying on to continue to do what they've been doing.
Yep. Everybody I was interested in has a good chance to be on the major league team. So I need new people to watch. And also, it's gotten harder to, from like, I don't watch minor league baseball on TV. I just don't pay that much attention to it. I watch the Brewers every day. I used to go see the minor league affiliate play in Kane County when that was a Cubs affiliate, but it's not anymore. They're in the independent league now and play against the Milkmen. So I don't have easy access to go and see like minor league baseball near my house anymore that is of any impact, which is kind of a bummer because that was always fun. So.
What is that park that's over by O'Hare? Is that not them?
That is, no. So Kane County is west of that. The one by O'Hare is the Chicago Dogs at Impact Field. And they also are in the independent league with the Milkmen.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering, because when I drive by there, I'm like, oh, that stadium looks kind of nice. So
it's a pretty nice stadium. It's a fun time, as all, you know, baseball is. But it's just guys, you know, on their very, very last shot to stay in some kind of semi-professional baseball. That's all that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to make it down to Beloit to see the new stadium down there. It's supposed to be very nice.
It not couldn't too be far worse. From
Madison. Yeah, it's a very nice stadium. The Diane Hendricks money did well there. So, yeah. All right, last Patreon question this week as we kind of wrap up a quick episode here. Throb Zombie asking, how satisfying was it to see some random Barstool guy get a couple hits off Trevor Bauer? So I don't know what this is referring to because none of that stuff really appears on my feed. But Ryan Paul, any thoughts on this?
I heard it obliquely mentioned. I didn't see it, but I did hear it discussed. And yeah, I'm not going to say that it makes me unhappy. It does. I'm smiling a little bit now if you can't hear that coming through the microphone. It does make me a little bit happy. The whole Trevor Bauer thing is so wild to watch him just try to catch on with a team. And my read on the situation is the biggest thing he needs to do to catch on with the team is to assure them that he can keep his mouth shut and that he's not going to be a huge PR nightmare for them, that 10 minutes after they sign him, there won't be some massive thing that breaks out. And the fact that he just like keeps posting on Twitter and keeps like going weirdly after teams like, hey, I see you have an injury, guess who's healthy and ready to go. He was doing stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, that's not going to assuage anybody's fears that when they bring you in, you're going to do Trevor Bauer things and make them regret every, you know, thing that they've possibly done. I think he is basically cooked as a big league player. I don't think whether or not he can pitch at a big league level, he probably can, but I don't think anybody's going to sign him because there's just so it's going to be a huge PR nightmare to start with because of his entire history going all the way back. But it's also then going to be a potential problem and a potential landmine. And you add in like the clubhouse stuff where, you know, the famous incident of him going around and demanding his teammates tell him why he's a bad teammate to his face. Like, he doesn't do well in the clubhouse generally either. The Dodgers players couldn't be rid of him fast enough when the last thing happened. I cannot imagine like anybody taking him on at this point. I just don't see him being in the big leagues again.
Nope. I have Barstool and Trevor Bauer muted on all of my feeds, so I was unaware that this happened. I will take it at face value that it did. But it makes me, I mean, it's kind of a net zero for me, honestly. A Barstool person succeeded at something, so the universe remains in balance. But Trevor Bauer definitely has, first of all, he is his own worst enemy. He's a jerk and a weirdo. A lot of baseball players are jerks and weirdos, but they're smart enough or have agents to tell them, just keep your mouth shut, make your money. When you retire, you can go be Curt Schilling all you want. But, you know, like Curt Schilling did. But he just can't help himself. And he falls, you know, that's fine if you're like winning MVP awards. And if you're like one of the most valuable players in baseball or football, you can shoot your mouth off all you want. But as soon as you decline at all, you become a huge problem and nobody's like somebody else can pitch for you. And that's Trevor Bauer's now on that side of the fence where he's just not worth it. He's not worth the bother. So yeah, he's probably done. Like you said, he could probably put up, you know, average-ish major league innings if he got himself into shape, maybe not quite that good, but he's not worth the trouble. He's annoying. He causes your PR department to have to do extra work. There's no reason to have him around. And so he's probably done.
Right. And the other thing, too, we know that he has had trouble getting along with coaches and with teammates. Going back to his time in the minors, coming up all throughout his time. I mean, we literally saw it on the mound when Terry Francona, one of the most respected people in the entire game of baseball, I guess, was, because he's now retired, but Terry Francona, one of the literal most respected people in the entire game of baseball, and Trevor Bauer, in a fit of petulance, takes, instead of handing the ball to him, throws the ball over the center field fence from the mound. I mean, if that's who you are and what you're about and all that, like, nobody in the clubhouse is going to be able to stand a person who would do something like that. That is, like, it's just beyond the pale. Yep. In terms of like teammate and clubhouse behavior, acting like that, like that level of petulance, it just adds into this toxic stew of all the personal stuff, all the various accusations that have been out there, and people get into very much like, oh, well, he was not convicted of this, or he wasn't, like, no, but the fact that it keeps coming up and that you keep hearing, well, there's a new accusation. Yeah, that probably isn't going to stop anytime soon either. Yeah. And it just all adds into this complete mess of toxicity that, like, why would anybody invite that into their team for, like you said, you know, maybe some league average-ish pitching?
Yeah, you don't need Trevor Bauer crimes to not have Trevor Bauer on your team. That's the thing. Like, he is publicly willing to advertise the fact that he is an asshole and that he is not going to get along with people. The MVP machine, in retrospect, recontextualized as sort of a document on Trevor Bauer's personality problems, is maybe one of the better ways to read it. And honestly, he'd have been better off playing an individual sport. The guy should have been a tennis player or something like that, because he can't get along with people. He can go and he can work out for 12 hours a day and be a huge, like, you know, tech workout nerd on things. But as soon as you have to play a team game, like, he's a net negative if he's not putting up actual tangible things on the field. So, yeah, the guy is, I think, a toast at this point. It should have gone into swimming or running or something else.
All right. That'll do it for Patreon questions this week. Thank you to everybody who sent one in. Reminder, patreon.com/MKETailgate. $2 a month, you get question priority. We answer any question you have on this show and on reporting as eligible. When you sign up or upgrade, you also get a shout out. And we got a couple of people to give thanks to this week. Ryan, who do we have?
Yeah, so we have a new person and he already asked a question here. So Michael Parr, thank you for joining the fold here. He has jumped in.
Welcome aboard.
And then we have a couple of upgrades. Drew G, who came in as a new patron a few weeks ago, has upgraded to the ball and glove level. So he will now be eligible to get all that extra content. And we will have a minor league podcast coming up here. I'm still trying to work something out with James. This is obviously for a guy who does prospecting and a guy who is on the fantasy side of things, this is his busy time. So it's always somewhat difficult to get these things figured out here, but I will be in contact with him about that.
There was a mini pod on Friday, and there'll be another one next Friday because the combine will have be over by then. So we'll do one on that too.
Yes. And then also, John P., obviously a down lineman, has upgraded to the ball and glove level. Gonna assume that's an RAE thing, but you know.
Probably a good assumption.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's both. But John, if you're listening, we thank you too.
Love the name. Obviously, you know, linebackers on the line of scrimmage on the goal line or down linemen, as we learned with the Packers last year. So not sure what the new defensive coordinator's philosophy is on that, but awesome to see you guys sign up and join. Thank you for signing up. And as a reminder, again, question priority plus the extra content. Sounds like we'll have a couple of extra podcasts soon over at patreon.com/MKETailgate. That's where you can go to sign up there. That'll do it for this week. Kind of a quick and easy episode, early days of spring. But as we get into the next few weeks here, we're going to start our rather in-depth season preview series. It's been quite hefty in the years past that we've done this. So we're going to take a week specifically dedicated to offense, a week specifically to the pitching, and then kind of wrap things up for, you know, like an NL Central preview and in league at large and make some predictions there leading up to opening day. So you could be on the lookout for that as well. In the meantime, we will continue to keep watching these spring training games, at least as much as Bally Sports will let us. And we'll be back here next week for the first part of that preview series on Milwaukee's Tailgate. Have a good week, everybody.